So I want to just say to our young people today, I'm never really particularly good at really preaching to really young people, but today I really have to spend some time with the adults because the topic we're going to discuss is very important for us who are adults, and in a certain way, I hope it's not something that you have to experience right away. I will have some things to say towards the end, but I want to talk to some of the older folks here who are a little further along on the journey about what I'm going to speak to about today is, if you will, the paradoxes of poverty and that call to be poor in spirit. And when I say paradoxes of poverty, a paradox is something that is contrary to the usual way of thinking. That's the root meaning of the Greek word paradoxes. Huh? It means something that's sort of different than the usual way. Most of us who live in this world say that, well, riches and wealth gives us freedom and lots of options, and we are very, very blessed, and poverty is utterly to be accursed. It is of itself something awful, and none of us want to be in poverty, and none of us want even for people we don't like to be in poverty. Poverty is something that takes away so many options. But I would say to you today that the paradox of these readings, we saw two women, one of whom was utterly free, and another one who, though not yet fully free, Elijah is able to summon her to a freedom that is free of fear, freedom that is completely open and available to whatever the Lord asks, and is able to give everything. And that, my brothers and sisters, is true freedom. That beautiful song, and I'll probably end with it as well, "Lord, I'm available to you. My storage is empty, and I'm available to you." And we can sing a song like that, but how many of us can really live it? "Lord, I'm available to you. But don't ask me to do this or this or this," and out comes the list, right? And "I hope he doesn't ask that." And we sing that we're available, but we're sort of available. We're not so radically free that we can say, "Lord, whatever you want, I want it too." See? And so let's talk a little bit about some of the paradoxes of poverty. And let's then see a little bit of the problem that we struggle with. And then let's look at these two women and what got them to that freedom. So first of all, some of the paradox of poverty. We who have a lot, and you say, "That's not me, Father, that must be that other guy over there." I'm telling you right now, you got a lot because you live in America. We're living at the top of the pile, and you know, we always want to think it's that other guy over there who earns a dollar more an hour. He's the greedy guy. He's the guy that's got it all going on. I'm just poor little old me. But at the end of the day, we really do. We have a lot. And even if it isn't money, we live in a nation that's got lots of good resources. We have paved streets. We have a reliable electrical grid, a fairly stable government. You know, a lot of stuff that we have a lot. And then add to that again, we live in very times where there's a lot of comfort. We have air conditioning and lights, and we have a lot of these things, lots of products, very fairly inexpensive, fairly cheap, and fairly diverse. We have a great kind of easy market economy. It quickly provides goods and services. And I'm not saying everything's just peachy, but I'm saying we've got an awful lot going for us. And so I want to just say that for all of us, we're blessed with a kind of prosperity that even if we don't like to admit it, if we look a little more carefully, we'll see that just because we live here, we have a lot of it. And it gives us options and a kind of a freedom to come and go, but that's not all it does. It gives us a lot of fear, and it locks us into a lot of anxiety, and the world starts to get its hooks in us, and we start to feel like we can't live without a lot of things. I'll prove it to you. If you were 10 miles from your home and you realize you forgot your cell phone, you're doing a U-turn and going back and get that thing, right? We have all these things, but they start having us. And you know, most of us live just fine without a cell phone. I didn't even get one until the year 2000. So for most of my life, I did fine without one. And now I feel like, oh, I can't live without it. And it gives me lots of options, but it also holds me in bondage. I'm just using that as a quick picture. But there's something about desire that we need to learn about. Desire is a good thing. It comes to us from God. Desire is what helps us to know that we need to eat, and we need to, we need to seek intimacy and love. We need to seek out for things that we need to survive. Our desires are good. They're from God. But since the fall, anyway, our desires are also unruly. And they kind of lie to us. And the other thing about our desires is that they're expansive. The Bible puts it this way: the eye is never satisfied with seeing, and the ear is never satisfied with hearing. No matter how much you get, it will never be enough. I know this from eating. That the more food you get, the more you want. Now, I don't mean to say that maybe an individual meal, like, okay, I've had enough. But what happens is you start to eat a little more than you need to, and your stomach just stretches. And you start eating, needing more and more and more. And it just continues to grow. Another couple of maybe quick examples. Most of us who are a little older remember a time when we live without a lot of the things we have today, and we did all right. For example, I mean, I'm just going to talk about my own experience for a moment, but I remember the first home that I grew up in back in Chicago. And by the way, I want you to know, Chicago summers can get just as hot as here. But we only had one room in the house that had air conditioning, a little window unit. We'd all pile into the den on really hot days. But air conditioning wasn't that widespread back in those days. And frankly, the house I grew up in, that house was 900 square feet. Some folks today got a great room that's 900 square feet. Some people today, their garage is 900 square feet. And we thought that the house we grew up in was spacious. And now it's like, oh my gosh, how can you live in a little house like that? And you see what's happening in a lot of these neighborhoods, the McMansion phenomenon? The whole main body of the old house becomes the garage, and then they build this giant thing, this giant box that reaches all the way into the backyard. And it's amazing because they have less kids than we all grew up with, right? And they need bigger houses. Now, this is what I'm trying to show you is that most of us did just fine with a house that was about 900 square feet some years ago. But what starts to happen is we start to get a little more and more, and we start to think we can't live without it, and we need more of it, and then more, and then we need the upgrades, and we need all of the finishes, you know, the granite and the, you know, the crown molding, and, you know, we need, and it starts to get its hooks in us, and our lives become very complicated and difficult. Again, cell phones, all the things that, you know, we did just fine without not too long ago. Even answering machines. I remember a time, sorry young people, but I even remember a time when we didn't even have answering machines. When there was nobody home, the phone just rang. They're all lonely. I guess they're not home. Now, you know, you got to get home and check your messages and listen. And now we're to the point where the cell phone's just ringing all the time and there's pressure to pick it up. And if not, if it goes to voicemail, you got to check. I left you a message. Right? And so these are good things. I'm happy we have them. But on the other hand, I also see, and I hope you do too, that they have a bad side. And they start to get their hooks in us. And it's not just that we're busy and we're all in a big hurry, but it's that our desires get a little out of whack and they're just never really satisfied. And it's always the next thing that we need. Now I've got to get the iPhone 6 oversized thing. Okay, you get the idea. But look, the nature of desire, not evil in itself, but the nature of desire, at least in our fallen human condition, is expansive. And it keeps saying, more, more, more. And even if you can remember a time when you could do just fine without something, after you finally start to indulge it, you feel like you can't live without it. And you can. So you see, there's a kind of a bondage and a slavery that goes with riches. And that's the paradox. The paradox is we think if I have money, I can do as I please. I can, you know, get everything done. And well, then why are we all on psychotropic meds for anxiety and to help ourselves sleep? I say not all of us, but so many. We've never been so rich and so affluent, and yet I think one of the key words that is very common in the modern experience is anxiety. And to some degree, depression, which is sort of the other side of the anxiety. We're anxious and we're fearful about many things. The three tallest buildings in this country, in Chicago, are all insurance companies. It shows the heights of our anxieties. See, kind of in a quick symbol. All right. Why do I go through all this with you? I'm trying to show you that there's paradox. We think having money, having a lot of things, will be a source of happiness. It will make us be less anxious. If I just had more money, I could pay my bills. And if I just had more money, I could have this. And everything would be simpler. And it doesn't quite work that way. On the other hand, there's a paradox about poverty to explore. Now, none of us want to be in poverty. But there's something about poverty that God calls us to. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, the Lord is really looking more to your heart than your wallet. But let's be honest, folks. It's very hard for the affluent to really be poor in spirit. There just is going to be some relationship to our wealth and opulence and prosperity and to our poor, being poor in spirit. If we've got too much going on of a worldly thing, we're just going to be so distracted and in bondage to these other things that it's going to be very hard, not impossible, but very hard to really be poor in spirit, to have a poverty, a simplicity of our life. I didn't say impossible, but it's hard. But the Lord summons us to a kind of a poverty, and not just a vague, abstract poverty, but something that does eventually hit our lives. Let me read to you just something, a couple lines I wrote about the paradox of poverty. And I want to remind you of the image that we're going to get back to of these two women who were radically free. Free, so free they could give everything and just trust God. But here's part of the paradox. Poverty can bring a certain kind of freedom. You can't steal from a person who has nothing. You cannot threaten people with loss who have nothing. And you cannot, if you will, kill someone who has already died to this world. And I simply hold up to you the value of martyrdom, whose martyrs went to their death praising Christ. And they endured pain, but they knew this was not it. No one took their life. They laid it down freely for something greater. So you can't steal from someone who has nothing. You cannot threaten with loss folks who have nothing to lose. And you cannot kill someone who has already died to this world. There's a kind of a freedom that comes with poverty. And the Lord is asking us to look at that today as we see two women who were radically free and from a worldly perspective were irrationally free. What is that woman doing putting her last 2 cents in the temple treasury? That's just foolishness. That's the cry of the world. Or what about this other woman that she's got only a half a measure of flour left, and that's all she's got for herself and her son. And when it's gone, they'll just starve. They'll just die and starve. And Elijah says, would you be generous and share some of that? And at first she's anxious. But he says, what if you could trust God more, who gave you that flour, than the flour itself? So in effect, Elijah says to her, do you trust your well-being in that half a measure of flour? Or do you trust in God who gave you the flour? For all of us, do you trust more in your money or your talent and your human resources? Or do you trust more the one who gave you the money that's in your wallet and your talents? And that's the question on the table. And these two women are able to say, I trust in the Lord more than the flour in the jar or the money in my wallet. I trust God. Now, that's the goal. How do we get there? And how do these women get there? It's interesting that this God, or the first reading, I should say, takes place in a town called Zarephath. And Zarephath means in the ancient Hebrew language, refining fire. Isn't it interesting that this woman lived in a town called refining fire? What is a refining fire? A refining fire is a fire that you take silver or gold or something precious and you put it into that fire and you purify it and you bring out, you get rid of the impurities, and you have pure gold and pure silver. Job said, God's been testing me in a fire, and when I come out of this fire, I'm coming out like pure gold. Now, none of us want to run into that fire. I got news, I don't want to go there. But you know what? God loves us too much to simply avoid that altogether. I say, Lord, all right, be gentle. He says, well, just let me decide that. I don't know both these women's backstories. We know more about the widow of Zarephath than this woman that the Lord sees in the temple. But what God, let's go to that woman in the temple who's so radically free that she can take her last coins and just give them to God and know that God will take care of her. How did she get there? I don't know, but I know that poverty's a painful reality. I know that poverty hurts. I know that poverty is like a fire. And there's something purifying. Now, don't just think about poverty in terms of your wallet, but has anyone here been through some storms? Has anyone here experienced some losses? Someone you loved, something you loved, maybe the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one. Maybe the loss, I know a few of you here who've had your house burned down. Loss, it hurts. But there's something purifying about that pain. Because it helps to remind us that this world can't close the deal. This world's just temporary. And as painful as those purifying fires, our own little Zarephath is, as painful as that is, God permits these things that come to all of us. I, like you, have had crushing losses in my life. Fire. And all kinds of things like we've all had these stories. But there's something, as painful as they are, because fire always hurts, and no one goes away from fire unchanged. There's something purifying and freeing about it. See, this world is lying to you. This world is saying, I'm your oyster. It isn't. It's a lie. This world will take back everything it gives you and assign you a stone-cold tomb. This world is lying to you. It gives you trinkets and toys, but they can't fill the God-sized hole that's in your heart, and they won't last. And at the end, a stone-cold tomb. And somewhere, God needs all of us to have some of these experiences of loss, of poverty. And something about that not just purifies us, but starts to set us free. Sometimes when we go through a big loss, we find a moment of grace where we can start to simplify. The veil is pulled back and we say, hey, this isn't the point. Something greater awaits. Our life starts to change. I don't know what the backstory of this woman who put those coins in, but I know this. She was radically free. Free of fear, free of anxiety. She trusted more in the Lord who gave her those two coins than those two coins, because she knows that this world is lying. This world can't seal the deal. And she says, all I know is God's been good to me. She gave back to God. And all of us are going to get to that point where we give back everything. And I've talked to you about it before. For most of us, it will take our deathbed to get us to the freedom that this woman had in the temple, putting those two coins in. Most of us, it will require our deathbed. We finally say, look, I've got nothing left here. Might as well go there. You got nothing more to lose. So you call out to God, and God says, I'm glad you finally asked. And you cry out in the words of Psalm 27, there's only one thing I want now, only this I seek, to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life and look at his beautiful face. That's all I want. And God calls. But you know, it really shouldn't take our deathbed. But for most of us, it's going to take that. And maybe a little purgatory on top of it. But that's got to be this woman's backstory. How was she that radically free? There's a story there. And her poverty, her loss, her not having it all, and the world is her oyster. She was so free that two coins didn't interest her anymore. Now, the woman at Zarephath, we know a little bit more, because when we find her, we see that she's in poverty, and she does have fear. But somewhere, she's still poor enough that she has little to lose. And so Elijah gives her a kind of a wager. He says, what if you were to make me a cake and share it with me? And she says, well, I can't possibly do that. I don't even have enough for me and my son. He says, well, what if you were to trust God? I'm a prophet, and I'm about to give you a word. And that word is that if you will be generous and share the little you have, God will give you even more. Do you trust God more than you trust that flower in your jar? There's a kind of a wager there, isn't there? And that's the same question that you and I have to ask. The honest truth is, when we got a lot, we put most of our trust in what we got, not in the one who gave it. And so little by little, sometimes God takes a few of those things away, tries to get our attention. God allows a few of those things to slip away, including our youth and our good looks and all that stuff. And little by little, we start to look more to God. But should it really take that? But whatever the purifications you need and that I need, we gotta let God do it so that we can get to that point where we are as free. And this woman heard a word, and in effect, it says, do you trust the flower in the jar or the one who gave you the flower in the jar? And what if he said to you, even with the little you have, I want you to be generous? Where's your trust now? And she said, there, with God. And her freedom rushed in. She took the risk, and God came through. Amen? But freedom sometimes comes at a price. I know this is heavy weather. And that's why I hope, young people, you haven't completely lost me here. But we're in November, and these are the themes that come up in November. We see the autumn leaves. We see the beautiful green leaves now turning many colors. Beautiful, but then they fall lifeless to the earth. But new life comes from that too. And so I would simply say to you that these themes of November and into December are hard themes, but they're the most beautiful because the Lord does an incredible work. I celebrate with you today two women who were radically free, who could radically trust God. And you know what that means? They weren't afraid. They were not afraid. And how did they get there? Through the school of pain and loss. Not an easy school, but a freedom which removes that awful, gnawing anxiety, fear that so many, that eats away at so many of us today. So there's a freedom. And I know you say, oh, I'm not ready if I'm sure. Just, Lord, I'm coming before you, Lord. Be gentle. I'm weak. But Lord, I know I need some more of this freedom. And I can't just snap my fingers and be like these two women. But I do know this, Lord. I want to be more free. I want to not be so afraid. I want to be able to use what little I do have and still be generous, not retreat into myself and be afraid. Lord, I have so little time, so little talent, and so little money, but help me to take that little that I do have and still be generous. Help me, Lord, not to be locked down in fear. Help me to be free and increasingly radically free. Now, before you get too scared about all this, let me just ask you to possibly reflect in your life. Especially if you've got a few years behind you. Are any of you more free today than you used to be? I am. You know, maybe it's you watch less television. I don't know what it is. You'd rather do other things. But maybe there's just some things. My life, like I hope for many of you, is becoming more simple, more focused on the main things that I'm getting ready for. I want to die loving God. And increasingly, I want to be like St. Paul who says, this one thing I do, I press on to the prize marked out for me in Christ Jesus my Lord, forgetting what lies behind, forging on to what's ahead. And that requires a kind of a freedom. And little by little, I got a long way to go, but little by little, I'm less obsessed and anxious and worried about money and 403Bs and whatever other things and futures and what people think of me and some of the stuff that used to make me wake up in the middle of the night and be anxious and fearful. It's gone now. There's other things sometimes that take its place, but they'll be gone soon. So the Lord will do this for you, and I'm a witness, and I hope some of you are witnesses, that you found greater freedom. Things that used to hold you in bondage don't do that anymore. And there's still some struggles, but there's greater freedom, greater room to maneuver. That's the way the Lord's going to do this. You stay with him in this conversation. Keep moving. And increasingly, we become like these two brave, courageous, fearless women who were called to be more trusting in the God who gave the flower or gave the money than the money or the flower. The Lord can do that for us. These two women are witnesses. There's some witnesses in this church today. And I pray that all of us will be witnesses to it. There's a beautiful old song that I mentioned earlier. It just says, Lord, I'm available to you. Oh, my storage is empty, and I'm available to you. And young people, if I could just say to you a real quick word here, just remember that the world is lying to you. It's saying, your goal in life is to get rich and powerful and famous, and your job is to get to know God and to be the man or the woman that God made you to be. And if you're doing that, there comes a serenity and a freedom. If you're trying to do the world's bidding, there's going to be anxieties, fears, bondage of a colossal nature. It sometimes takes time to sort all that out and figure it out, but somewhere all of us have to finally say, Lord, my life has to be increasingly about you. Help me to become like these women, freed of so much stuff, empty, so that you can fill my storage. You can be the one who doesn't let the flower run dry. You can be the one who will take care of me, even if I don't have $50 million sitting in my savings account. I'll be all right, Lord. Somehow, I used to get by with a lot less. I started to think I needed a lot more, and I went into bondage. Now, Lord, help me to unload and get back to greater simplicity. Lord, help me to empty my storage of this world so that you can fill it. Lord, I'm available to you.